Welcome to the ILEA Training Podcast Series. This is podcast number CP001. Today's subject, the Brady Rule for American Law Enforcement, is presented by Charles N. Braun II, ILEA staff attorney and law instructor. I'm your host and moderator, Tim Underwood. Thanks for joining us today, Charles. Let's start off with talking about exactly what is the Brady Rule for American law enforcement.
The Brady Rule comes from a landmark decision decided in 1963 from the U.S. Supreme Court entitled Brady versus Maryland. That's where the rule comes from, and it has been enforced by the courts ever since.
And does this rule also apply to Indiana-based law enforcement officers?
Tim, yes, it does. Anytime the U.S. Supreme Court hands down a law enforcement-related decision, it would apply to every single police officer in the United States, federal, state, or local, especially since Mapp versus Ohio decided in the 1960s when the U.S. Supreme Court nationalized the Fourth Amendment and the exclusionary rule, giving the U.S. Supreme Court the power to review any federal, state, or local police officer's actions as it impacts the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm. Is the Indiana rule identical to the national rule?
In essence, Tim, the Indiana rule is the same as the federal Brady rule, although I do see the possibility of accidental destruction of non-exculpatory evidence at least being a viable, debatable issue at a suppression hearing. But in essence, the Indiana rule pretty much follows the federal rule on this, except for that one minor distinction.
Mm-hmm. So can Indiana police rules really be different than the national rules for law enforcement?
Well, that's an excellent question, Tim. In terms of police procedures, certainly when the federal government, primarily through the U.S. Supreme Court, hands down a police decision under the Bill of Rights, and it has an impact upon police practices, certainly state and local government units and employees, including police officers of the state and local governmental units, need to obey those requirements. But certainly, the U.S. Supreme Court does permit state and local government to develop their own special rules as long as the minimum national standards are met. The state and local government can go beyond the minimum standards as mandated by the U.S. Supreme Court under the U.S. Constitution and decide to give suspects in criminal cases or citizens in general greater constitutional rights or legal rights by statute or by state constitution. And that's the only way that state and local governmental units can go beyond the national standards is when they choose to give citizens greater legal rights, not the other way around. In terms of the Brady Rule, let me discuss the details of it. In the original Brady decision, there was a murder prosecution, and the defense attorney representing the defendant at one point asked for discovery from the prosecuting attorney, including witness statements and co-conspirator statements made, and those requests were denied. And it went to trial without the opportunity of the defense attorney to look at the co-conspirator witness statements and other evidence. And there was a conviction. And the murder conviction was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And in this landmark decision in 1963, the U.S. Supreme Court really answered a very important question. In essence, this was the question: of all the objectives of the American criminal justice system, which objective is the most important? And the answer to that question creates the Brady Rule. And the answer initially is to seek the truth. That is the number one objective of the American criminal justice system. If there's going to be justice, the judge and the jury have a constitutional right to hear all of the evidence at trial, no matter who it favors. And when the police or the prosecutor hide criminal evidence from the defense attorney and also the defendant, obviously, that would favor the defendant in his or her attempt to prove their innocence, there's a denial of justice because all the facts are not being disclosed to the jury during the criminal trial. So even though we have an adversarial system of justice, the police are trying to get a conviction, the defendant is trying to be found not guilty at the criminal trial, and that adversarial system of justice is a lot like a battle, a war, every police officer witness has a greater responsibility beyond winning the case, and that is making sure that the truth, as uncovered through the detective's criminal investigation, the lead investigating officer's investigation, the arresting officer's investigation, the police side of the adversarial system of justice and the prosecutor representing them have a duty under the 4th and 14th Amendments, especially due process of law under the 14th Amendment, to disclose to the defense attorney before the trial any evidence that they ask for, but especially any evidence that would be material to proving the elements of the charge and or would be exculpatory. In other words, it would tend to prove the innocence of the defendant in terms of the criminal charges as filed. And because these witness statements might have been material, had the jury read them or they were repeated by witness testimony and the outcome of the trial might have been different, the U.S. Supreme Court in Brady versus Maryland reversed the murder conviction. And there have been other cases since then from the U.S. Supreme Court that has said the same thing. So, in fact, subsequent U.S. Supreme Court decisions basically refer to this as the Brady Rule. Much like Miranda, the Miranda rights come from the landmark decision of Miranda versus Arizona. This comes from the Brady versus Maryland case. And so this is the rule that is required by the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's also enforced here in the state of Indiana by case decision as well.
So who in law enforcement should be especially concerned with the Brady Rule?
Tim, any police officer gathering evidence is the technical answer, as well as the prosecutor representing those evidence gatherers in the criminal prosecution. Because obviously the police need to acquire from the crime scene or through other evidence gathering procedures criminal evidence. Because only criminal evidence can be introduced in a criminal trial to get proof beyond a reasonable doubt levels of proof for the conviction on the elements of the charge. And criminal evidence can be neutral. In other words, it doesn't favor either the prosecution or the defendant. Or it can favor the police and prosecutor in terms of proving the elements of the crime were committed by the defendant at the crime scene, at the alleged time of the crime. Or it can prove or tend to prove that the defendant is innocent. So you never know, as a detective or as the lead investigating officer or the arresting officer as a evidence gatherer as well, what kind of criminal evidence you're going to get as you hunt for it. And so this case basically tells every police officer that is gathering information, gathering facts, ultimately gathering criminal evidence for this case, if they come across evidence that would help the defendant prove his or her innocence, in other words, it's material to the elements of the crime, and it helps the defendant prove his or her innocence, then this material and relevant evidence has to be handed over, in essence, on a silver platter to the defense attorney prior to the plea bargain agreement, prior to the criminal trial especially. so that all the evidence is given to the jury, no matter where the chips fall, no matter who it favors. And so the technical answer, every police officer gathering information is bound to it. And then ultimately, as the U.S. Supreme Court said, the prosecutor has the responsibility of handing it over once he or she discovers the Brady material from the police, has the duty of handing it over to the defense attorney. But in subsequent decisions, the U.S. Supreme Court has said quite clearly, this is a joint responsibility of the prosecutor and the police to find or to, once they find this Brady material, to declare it as such and to make sure that it is handed over to the defense attorney before trial.
So who is it that enforces the Brady rule?
In the end, it's the trial court judge, and if there's an appeal, the appellate court judge is reviewing the issue. In the end, that's who enforces it. But before that, certainly there are other critical people involved. Obviously, since it is a duty of the police to safekeep and to designate criminal evidence as Brady material under the standards that I summarized, the police have the duty to enforce it by obeying it. Certainly, the prosecutor has a responsibility and therefore a requirement to enforce the Brady rule by asking the police, I want to see all your criminal evidence, or have you uncovered any Brady material? If so, I want to see it, let's discuss it, and let's jointly determine whether or not it is Brady material and whether or not it needs to be handed over to the defense attorney, because it is now considered Brady material. So the prosecutor certainly could enforce it using that approach. Certainly a prosecutor could decide not to file criminal charges if, for example, a prosecutor found that half of the criminal evidence was intentionally destroyed by the police because they feared its impact at a criminal trial. Well, a good prosecutor would say, look, half of this evidence was destroyed by you folks. You shouldn't be destroying any evidence at all. And that's bad enough. But this was Brady material that would help the defendant prove innocence. And it would likely change the outcome of the trial if we would prosecute. So the prosecutor can enforce this by not even filing the criminal charges in the first place. But if charges are filed, then the next person involved as an enforcer would be the defense attorney. The defense attorney can enforce this Brady rule by, one, aggressively asking for any and all information the police have gathered from start to finish, from the crime scene on forward. Any criminal evidence at all will be the request by the defense attorney, but good defense attorneys will also specifically ask for, by name, Brady material. Give me any Brady material that the police have uncovered during their investigation of the defendant in this case. So the defense attorney can enforce the Brady rule by strictly applying it at the discovery stage as well.
How is the Brady rule violated by police officers?
Well, it can be violated in a variety of ways, and they have to be careful not to get into this quicksand. The worst case scenario would be the police uncover material and exculpatory evidence that would favor the defendant in terms of winning at criminal trial, and they destroy it intentionally. That would be the worst case scenario in terms of violation. The next level would be the police uncover Brady material. Again, it favors the defendant and would help the defendant win at criminal trial. And in the gathering process or in the storage process of the criminal evidence, it is lost. And it's amazing the number of cases where that has occurred, because police departments have had sloppy criminal evidence collection procedures, or the officers that are gathering the evidence are not trained and they're not accustomed to the collection of criminal evidence, or they don't have an appreciation for the responsibility of proper evidence collection procedures, or the department doesn't even have any rules for the property room, the evidence room, and things get lost by mistake or by gross and wanton misconduct, that would be the second way that Brady could be violated. So, or three, a combination of those two. And certainly the police don't want to get into either one, because they both can lead to a complete destruction of their criminal prosecution. So intentional destruction or gross and wanton loss can either way lead to a Brady rule violation, especially if the evidence destroyed or lost, if given to the defense attorney, would have likely changed the outcome of the trial because, again, of the exculpatory and material standards that I've talked about previously.
Charles, why is there a difference under the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule between the accidental loss of criminal evidence versus the intentional or gross and wanton loss of criminal evidence by the police?
Tim, that's an excellent question. And the answer lies in what the essential purpose of the exclusionary rule, developed in Weeks versus United States and then made a national standard in the Mapp versus Ohio case in the 1960s, the critical purpose of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct whenever the police, during their criminal investigation, violate the constitutional rights of the suspect and they gain criminal evidence as a result. The exclusionary rule says that that criminal evidence must be suppressed and the jury will never hear about this evidence because it was tainted evidence under fruit of the poisonous tree because it was illegally recovered by the police. And the U.S. Supreme Court has been quite consistent in stating that if there is no police misconduct, then the exclusionary rule really shouldn't be used under the good faith exception of the exclusionary rule as an example. So in this case, if there's intentional and malicious destruction of evidence that would help the defendant win at trial, then that obviously shows police misconduct, a clear example of it. Where if the criminal evidence is accidentally lost by a mistake, an innocent mistake, confusion, something that doesn't amount to gross and wanton misconduct as well, then in that particular situation, the courts are not going to be as inclined to suppress that criminal evidence. So this Brady rule really is designed to attack police and or prosecutor misconduct in the way that they receive, store, and present criminal evidence.
I see. Now, what can happen if the Brady rule is violated?
Well, in two very significant cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court simply reversed the murder convictions in both cases because of violations of the Brady rule. So, if there is an outright violation of the Brady rule, then it can cause a reversal of the conviction on appeal.
And why is the preservation of evidence so important to gaining a criminal court conviction?
That's the name of the game. Gathering criminal evidence, meaning facts and information that relate to the elements of a crime, and properly receiving it and storing it, and having a proper chain of custody for all pieces of criminal evidence, so that it can be properly presented, either by an exhibit or through witness testimony at trial. And anytime under the Brady rule or the exclusionary rule in general, some of the criminal evidence is suppressed, it weakens the prosecution team's ability to get a conviction. Because remember, obviously, in order to get a conviction, unless it's a plea bargain agreement, of course, you have to have proof beyond a reasonable doubt level of criminal evidence, and you've got to convince 12 out of 12 jurors that you have reached this high level of evidence called proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So losing any evidence can be a death knell to the ability to get a conviction. So preserving all evidence, no matter who it favors, is not only meeting the seeking the truth mandate of Brady, but also it's the name of the game in terms of how you win cases in criminal court.
So, Charles, is there a good source for actually seeing written Brady rules?
Yes, there is, Tim. The best advice I have on this would be to type into the student's computer search engine the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. And if they do that, they will go to the official webpage for the District Attorney's Office there in L.A., and you will ultimately, by reviewing that webpage, come across the Brady Protocol. And it's a Directive 2-08, that was created in 2002 by the District Attorney's Office there. And it extensively evaluates the Brady Rule, and it, in great detail, develops a written standard for the police to use in their criminal investigations, and it guarantees compliance with the Brady Rule mandate. And any student that reviews this Brady Protocol, Special Directive 02-08, off that website will have a great amount of information so that they can go ahead and produce their own written guidelines under the Brady Rule. If you want to have a police department protocol for it, or if a prosecutor presently doesn't have one, this would be a good one to contemplate using. That would be the best advice that I have. Now, certainly to better understand the requirements of the Brady Rule, I would like to mention some cases that would be illustrative of what I have been talking about that would be beneficial for the student to review at his or her leisure. Certainly, Brady versus Maryland, which was decided in 1963, can be reviewed at 373 U.S. 83. 373 U.S. 83. But certainly, there have been other cases where the U.S. Supreme Court has also reviewed the Brady Rule since that time. Strickler versus Green, decided in 1999. 527 U.S. 203. 527 U.S. 203 is a good case to review. And one of the most recent U.S. Supreme Court decisions dealing with the Brady Rule is a case decided in 1995 by the U.S. Supreme Court, Kiles versus Whitley. And that's a 514 U.S. 419 U.S. Supreme Court decision. A student in reviewing those U.S. Supreme Court decisions would get an excellent understanding of what I have been summarizing in this podcast today. Now, the state of Indiana, Tim, as I mentioned, has also ruled on the Brady matter in its own criminal appellate court case history. And I'd like to cite for the student's benefit a couple of Indiana cases. One would be Chisel versus State, C-H-I-S-S-E-L-L versus State, and that would be 705 Northeast 2nd, 501. That's an Indiana Court of Appeals decision decided in 1999. That would be a very good decision to review. And also another one, and this one is an Indiana Supreme Court decision, would be Nugin, N-O-O-J-I-N versus State, 730 Northeast 2nd, 672. As I said, a 2000 Indiana Supreme Court case. And these cases collectively would give the podcast student a greater understanding of what I have been talking about today with respect to the Brady Protocol or Brady Rule. And I would like to certainly end my discussion by emphasizing a very unique aspect to the Brady Rule that police officers especially should be very careful about. If you review the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Brady Protocol, you will see that the concept of exculpatory evidence and material evidence not only includes objective evidence dealing with the actions of the defendant or non-actions of the defendant in terms of proving innocence, but also credibility of witnesses. I repeat, the credibility of witnesses is also a Brady rule matter. So if police officers are using a confidential informant and the confidential informant has to testify in the criminal trial, then if the officer is aware that the informant has a perjury conviction in the past or was caught lying in a previous case, let's say 5 years ago when he or she was testifying in court, that is the kind of information that the police and the prosecution team also have to provide to the defense attorney before the trial. Because certainly, there's only two ways to introduce criminal evidence. One is through witnesses. Two, it is through exhibits. And the credibility of a witness is always a crucial and relevant evidentiary matter in any criminal court trial. And if there is evidence out there that would help prove that this witness has been dishonest in the past, truthfulness, again, remember what the number one objective of the criminal justice system is in America, to seek the truth. Any problem in the past that would attack the witness's ability to be truthful is going to be material that has to be provided to the defense attorney. And Tim, this also applies to every single police officer who is testifying in that criminal trial as well. So any disciplinary action that the officer has obtained in his or her past as a professional police officer that would go towards the credibility of that officer to be truthful as a witness when testifying in court. Let's say a police officer was disciplined for 3 days for faking a sick day or for making a false statement to a supervisor. The disciplinary history of police officers can also be Brady material. And certainly as a result, I would encourage administrators, police administrators across the state of Indiana, to somehow, some way track these disciplinary decisions that deal with truthfulness, the credibility of police officers, and certainly you want to discuss this with your local prosecutor to determine how you want to do this. But again, if you review the Brady Protocol from the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, you'll see that credibility of witnesses also clearly falls under the Brady Rule.
All right. Well, thank you, Charles.
You're welcome.